Excuse me. Hey, boys. Yeah, you. Huh? Got something to say? Share it with the whole class.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Back of the Class, a guide to education from the kids at the back of the class. Before we start, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everybody who has decided to join us and follow us. As always, we can be found on iTunes by searching for the Back of the Class on the podcasting section. And we can also be reached via email at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. As always, I am Patrick O'Shea, an independent educational technology consultant. Joining me this week is Daniel Curry Corcoran, the Director of Accountability at Newport News Public Schools. Missing this week is Simon Richmond, who has gone into the field somehow. He's on vacation. He's canoeing with his kids. He's at an Inuit education facility, re-education, whatever they were calling it. What was it?
He's finishing up his seal snow boots this week.
Yes. So he's regardless, he's not able to join us. However, he hopefully will be back next week unless we kick him off the show.
There's already one vote for that.
Yeah, we've got a decision to make. The show topic for tonight is going to be brought by Daniel. So hopefully he's going to wow us with his explanation of what he's brought to the table today.
I'm all about the wow.
I'm turning it over to you now.
Okay. Well, what I thought we would talk tonight a little bit is not directly, in that it doesn't directly mention education, but it's directly pertinent to the work we're dealing with in many different aspects, whether it's university or K-12 or independent consulting. So the focus of our topic tonight really is leadership. And I thought it was actually interesting. So this is really taken – my wife sent me this, and give her plug for – getting me in touch with this article. She actually she subscribes to a newsletter, Contented Cows, and you can find out more about them, a book written by Bill Catlett and Richard Hayden. And, of course, you can find out more about them at their blogs, Contented Cow and whatnot. But this week, it was an article on – they do a feature article every week. And so this one was really about leadership, and I thought it was really interesting. It was a really good read, and I have some snippets from it. But to set it up a little bit, I think we've talked a little bit over the past couple of weeks about some different things that we're facing, and definitely in K-12 education, and that, you know, talking about the 21st century classrooms, what those look like, what those are going to be. And I think we've come to a realization, you know, given especially the economic situation that we're in across the world, really, jobs are changing, the economy is changing. I think America is facing a couple of different dilemmas in that we've really prepared a workforce. I think Simon was really talking about last week, kind of this industrial workforce, preparing people to be factory workers or, you know, to go contribute and whatnot in different ways. But we've lost a lot of these manufacturing jobs. You know, they've been outsourced. They've been sent out to other countries and whatnot. So where are we going in the 21st century? And one of the things I think this article really speaks about to the fact that and I'm speaking really about America here, but I mean, it's of course, it's not an American idea, but something that I think Americans have been really good on is the ideas of creating ideas, you know, the Googles and the Yahoos and all this stuff that we have. I mean, we speak a lot of bad about our education system, but frankly, people from around the world are still flocking to America for our education. So one of the things America's really good at is creating ideas. And we're trying to think about in 21st century classrooms how we have students, teach students to be thinkers, to be ideas, to generate ideas. So what this one is called, this is a feature article, and it's called You Get Paid to Think. And I'm going to read a couple of different snippets from it, and I thought we would get talking. It said, the very nature of organizations today, in contrast with just a couple of generations ago, puts a real premium on thinking, brain work over brawn work. Thinking, good, clear, productive, breakthrough kind of thinking is hard work. Well, it is for us anyway. We're not talking about musing or mulling or daydreaming, but flat-out brain-racking, conjugating, conceiving, concluding, visualizing, comprehending, learning, analyzing, and figuring out. All that is hard work, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Thinking takes time. Deal with it. The best advice we can give to deal with it is this. Give yourself and those you lead, and I think that's important, those you lead, The Gift of Time to Think. Thinking is a three-part process. Input, processing, and output. And just to conclude, it says here, in this course I'm jumping around a couple different places, but while you're giving people the gift of time to think, give them something else, the freedom to think on their own, without the possibility of your intervention. Just because we can be constantly available to our team members doesn't mean we always should be. It's good for them and for us periodically, usually with advice, advance notice, make ourselves unavailable for a few hours or a few days. And the reason, so I'll stop there in terms of reading, but I think one of the things we've done in education is we've tried to teacher-proof education a little, to a lot. You know, we've really got our content standards. You know, we have grading and reporting policies now where a lot of people are doing the same things. And we've taken a little bit, I think, of the art out of teaching. You know, I'm talking globally in general sense. But the idea is, given all the pressures that teachers have in the classroom, and we're expecting them to lead students to this new understanding, this new being leaders, being visionaries, they simply don't have time to process what they're doing. And so one of the things I thought we would talk about is, you know, given the way we structure now, the way we train people, always got content, how do we re-envision our classrooms and the general way we work to give teachers the quality time they need to think, given that thinking is, you know, input, processing, and the output? How do we do that?
See, it's interesting that you talked about this, because I would not have taken it down the path of teachers. Because as you were reading that, I was entirely thinking about the fact that we don't give students enough time to think. Maybe this is just an indoctrination issue where I was gonna make a joke while you were reading that about, you know, if we give students too much time to think, when are they gonna do their homework? And it's
a whole other topic for a whole other show.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to me to think about the idea that that thinking has been devalued, but I think it's in many ways is a result of not understanding that teaching is an art. It's not a science necessarily, or you know, it's much more of an art than it is a science. We as Americans culturally, I think we want to kind of create a duality where something is one or the other of something else. And if we have the choice between, teaching as an art or teaching as a science, we always want it, as Americans, I'd say, we always want it to be the science, because that's quantifiable and it's easily, it's black and white and it gives you the right answer and those kinds of things. I think that, you know, if we get right down to it, that the change in education really has to come at a grassroots level, where people are demanding this kind of this becomes part of the accountability movement. It's not just about the black and white. It's a much more nuanced kind of approach that takes into account the time that students need to think and digest those kinds of things, and the natural correlation that teachers are going to need that same kind of time to think and digest and create good output.
Well, I think one of the things I agree with you. I mean, unfortunately, but I mean,
so rarely it happens.
We're asking teachers to do an interesting thing. We're asking them to, you know, prepare your students for jobs that don't exist yet. Hopefully, everybody's seen you probably go to YouTube and watch. This is another good video. A shift happens. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's talking about all the changes that are happening in the world, and you know, America's place in the world, and the global community that's kind of, you know, rising up, and what's happening there. And we're asking teachers, you know, make these shifts, train visionaries. But yet we've gotten caught up in the bean counting aspects of No Child Left Behind. And I think, you know, in its core sense, I think No Child Left Behind is a good concept. You know, we're going to look out for subgroups that have, you know, never had a voice, and we're going to make sure that everybody's learning. But what happened is we have all these, you know, quantifiable goals. We're going to be at 73 and we're going to be at 74. So quickly the emphasis has gotten off our subgroups of kids, whatever that may be, our white kids or our black kids, and it's focused on 73 and 74. And as soon as you introduce the numbers, people begin to kind of, you know, game the system. So what that has done, it's really just caused such a shrinking in our curriculum that there simply is no time to think. And if we don't find a way to give teachers back that time and take some of these duties away that they might have that are, you know, because it's really, given our tight budget situation, I mean, public schools are hurting all over the place with the budgets we have now and, you know, given our economic situation. But it really gets to the kind of the, again, the old adage of it takes a village. We have to find ways of freeing up teachers to do some thinking, because until they're able to actually think not only about their work, but their kids and who their kids are and what their names are and their interests, we're not going to be able to get them back in. We're not going to be able to get the kids' trust to kind of say, okay, you know, let's do something. We're not going to have the trust in the classroom. And without that type of trust in the classroom, it's difficult to do project-based learning.
But how likely is that to be the case if we're without a rather dramatic change in the structure of education? I mean, maybe we're advocating for a rather dramatic shift. But if I'm a high school history teacher and I've got 150 students, then I don't have enough time to think individually about each of those kids and really give the cognitive effort that it would be necessary to do that. So maybe we're talking about things like longer school days, where instead of going to school for 6 hours, you're in school for 9 hours. Better align it with parents' work schedules, and you do away with all kinds of latchkey kids and kids at a home by themselves, all the difficulties that are associated with that, and you give some added time in there. The problem I have with something like that is that given the current climate, it seems like just another opportunity to fill it with more of the same. You know, you give a school 3 more hours, they don't fill it with the 3 hours of thinking, they fill it with 3 more hours of the same thing they're always doing. Does that make any sense? Hold on. I think we're having some audio problems. I can't hear Danny. I can see his mouth moving on Skype, but I can't hear him.
All right, I'm back. I inadvertently muted myself. Or maybe it was destiny muting me.
If only I had that ability.
One of the things I think it's about leadership. And I think sometimes we expect leadership to be the Obama movement, where, you know, we have millions and millions of people turning out in the streets waving, you know, yes, you can, si se puede type things. I don't think that's what we're talking about here. And not me. I mean, I think leadership can happen at all different levels. And one of the things that always comes to my mind is the young Chinese gentleman who stood in front of a tank. I mean, he cannot have just gotten out there and done that. He had to give that some serious thought. You're going to stand in front of a tank? You don't just, I mean, again, there's inspiration and you do things. But I think there was some serious thought. I think he put himself aside and he was standing up for a greater cause. That's why I think it's about leadership. I know history teachers have millions of different things, but you hear great things about teachers doing fantastic subjects. I mean, we have gobs and gobs of examples of teachers in Newport News who are just doing cool things with podcasts and even in their own content areas. But it gets down to leadership. And the more we try to teacher-proof our education and not give teachers the – I mean, these teachers, they're professionals. This is what they're supposed to do. They're professionals. We need to treat them like professionals. And I'm not trying to say that any division doesn't do that, but I think in general – the accountability movement, we've tried to, you know, with the problem of getting teachers with, you know, limited pay. I mean, they're not lawyers who are going to make $115,000 a year coming out of college. So, I mean, definitely, but we have some fantastic teachers who are willing to step up. And I think we just have to capitalize on leadership. And when we see some good ideas out there, we have to give people the space to do them and the freedom to do them without being bound by these arbitrary, you know, well, you're not going to make 73% that year. Well, who cares? I remember another division that I've worked in, Montgomery County Public Schools, I remember one of the things we used to talk about is they had some great opportunities, I thought, and I'm a big fan of immersion programs. I am a fan of literacy, by the way, but these were immersion programs.
Well, just not your own.
Yeah, I'm not, yeah, do as I say, not as I do. This is correct. But one of the things, they had fully immersed, you know, elementary programs, Spanish, and even in Chinese that was taught, you know, reading and writing and whatnot. And we used to have lots of debates, I mean, professionally about students in these immersion programs not passing the grade 3 SOL. And it came a point where, you know, a lot of us, you know, we're starting to say, you know, what's our goal here? Is our goal here to create bilingual learners who are going to take 5 and 6 APs one day and, you know, go on to speak 4 and 5 languages? Or is our goal to pass the grade 3 SOL? Because that's what, you know, again, that's what we're accountable for. I think as we take, you know, it almost gets to the point of, you know, what is our goal? What are we trying to do here? And I think, you know, if we don't take the time to think and we don't step away from what we're doing and give teachers, you know, we've given them planning times, but then their planning time is on their hall duty or whatnot in some cases. Or, you know, one of the things this article highlights, and I'll read a little bit more, it says, make time and find the place. For all its accessibility, for some of us, the one place that's probably the least conducive to productive thinking is our office. Because there's so many distractions to the office. You know, the phone's ringing, the computer's going. I mean, so we need to find a way to give teachers back some free time so that they both can decompress and think about what they're doing. I think we're going to see big strides if we can find ways to do that. And I think, you know, we're doing a lot of that here in Newport News, finding ways to give teachers back their time.
Well, give me a concrete example of something that you're doing to give teachers back their time.
Concrete example. Man, you're putting me on the line here.
I'm guessing that the people who are listening to us are going to have the same kind of questions. I mean, it's all well and good to think about this thing in the abstract, but in the practical and in the constraints of what we're talking about, what does that look like? How do you go about making the more? Because here's the thing. I think that we're so focused on effectiveness in education, we never get to the efficiency part. Mm-hmm. And you know that. Granted, you want to be effective before you're efficient. But at some point, in order to live in an ever-changing world and be productive, you have to be more efficient. And I don't think we're very efficient right now. And, you know, whether we're going towards the right goals or not, I tend to think that, you know, the accountability movement is a great idea in theory. It's the practice that throws it all out of whack.
Let me give you some ideas. I mean, some of the ideas we're doing in my office, and really, you know, that's just where I'm most focused is you know, a lot of times we've done some different things. So when we do, you know, we do a lot with data. We've really moved our focus of our accountability office to not just managing the testing and doing the research and, you know, some program evaluation. One of the things we're doing with is trying to help create that bridge between all this data and getting some information out of it. So how can we actually apply it? You know, and our teachers, frankly, a lot of us, not just our teachers, don't have a lot of formal training in doing this, you know. So one of the things we're doing is to try to give them some time back, to make sure they have time back, is we're really starting to invest in some different practices. And one of those is we use a really cool video software where when we give teachers data now, we spend a lot of time doing some general walkthroughs when we give them data. Typically, what we've done in the past is we've invited teachers to come in for training, right? So what impact does that have? They either have to get a substitute. They might not get to come because they can't get their classes covered, or they have to leave their building and come to us. And then we expect them to do a couple. We expect them to be, you know, efficiency experts. They have to know what we've taught them immediately. And then they got to go back to their schools to apply it. So, you know, we're doing different types of training videos where they can watch this at their leisure. They can go home and watch it. It's actually contextual to what they maybe not what they want to do, but maybe they can do it in a free time. Or, you know, these are quick clips. I'm not talking about 35 minute videos, like, you know, 30 minute videos we're doing here. These are 2, 3, 4 minute things, you know, build their skills, give them some training to say, okay, you're using this data, here's one thing you can do with it. And then another video says, here's another thing you can do with it. So I think one of the things that teachers have told us is they don't mind coming to meetings. They don't mind coming to meetings where they love coming out of a meeting with a product. If they create something or they're going to walk back and improve their instruction, you know, one of the things that the superintendent here tells us is, you know, teachers come with their A game all the time. And I believe that. Teachers want to do better. They want to learn how to improve. You know, another thing we're doing is we're doing a lot with web conferencing software. That's where we're going now. To be able to have teachers, you know, log on at their computer instead of getting out of their classroom. You know, maybe they can get it. We can archive these videos. They can see it. So I think just by not in my part, just by not pulling them out of their buildings, we're giving them some time back.
That's a great example. I mean, it's the kind of non-work related expectations that come into these things. You know, come in on your Saturday and give up a Saturday to do. do something that we think is important.
I agree. But when I started teaching my mentor teacher, probably one of the best teachers I've gotten to work with, of course. I mean, she had a big influence on me. She told me three things when I started. Because, you know, I came out of college and I had all the kids sitting, and I was working in an urban school, and I had all the kids sitting in a horseshoe. And she said, no. We're not going to sit in a horseshoe right now. She said, they're going to sit facing each other's backs until you're able to establish yourself as the leader in the classroom. And, you know, it might have worked in one or two of my classes, and then I would have been eaten alive in my other three. I wasn't ready to manage it because, you know, I'd only done this horseshoe-type lessons in my methods courses where it was, this is the way to do it. You know, I didn't deal with boys sitting next to girls and throwing paper and heads down. I had no practice with that. The other thing she said to me was, don't smile until Christmas. She said, be friendly, but don't smile. Great, great idea. I tell you, I had a great year. The third thing she says was, you know you've given up your weekends, right? And that was my life. And I had a great year. And I found ways to work smarter, which I don't, you know, she was a much older teacher. I don't think she really got there. You know, she was used to doing things. But, you know, me, there was no way I was giving up my weekends. Good gracious, that's why I got into this business. But I was involved, so involved that I wanted to do such a good job with my kids that grading papers, you know, took a little bit more time. So you just, I had time to think. If I wasn't working directly, I was processing, you know, what am I going to do better on Monday?
See, this for me is one of the major lessons that I've learned about, you know, the learning process is that the learning curve is never, you know, straight up or, you know, you start from zero and move up one peg every week. Sometimes the learning process involves a learning curve where you actually confuse yourself over the short term in order to get the long-term gains. And if that's the case, and I'll put it in a concrete example, if you're in a French class, you may come in with a bit of French knowledge, and as you learn to conjugate verbs or whatever, you start confusing yourself, and then all of a sudden, 3 weeks into the class, everything kind of snaps in place, and you start learning better. Well, that works fine, but it means that you do have to give it the time for things to work. And I think that's one of the problems we have is that in education, it's constantly trying to try new things instead of giving the things that we're trying enough time to kind of work themselves out.
True.
With the accountability movement, I think we've kind of given it enough time to see the flaws and try to work around or, you know, overcome those flaws. But for me, this all comes, you know, if we're looking at things like efficiencies and those kinds of things, I look for technical solutions. And maybe that's just because I'm, you know, because
you're a nerd, yes.
Well, no, it's because
a lot of nerds own yachts, though. I'm not kicking it at all.
It's for me, I don't own a yacht, you know, unless you consider my
You're not that big of a nerd.
Unless you consider my son's bath toys yachts. No, I think that, you know, what it comes down to is that if we think of let me take a step back. The reason I think of technical solutions is because that's my hammer. And whenever you have whatever hammer you have, all your problems are nails. And so, you know, I've got a hammer. That problem over there looks like it's a problem, so I need to fix it with my nail, which is technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not naive enough to think that technology will fix all these issues, but I do think that in certain efficiency cases, we can look for that. If we're looking to give teachers more time back, then we can talk about things like distance learning opportunities where they don't have to get out of their classroom and spend half an hour in traffic to get to some place to learn something they could have learned sitting at their desk.
That's right.
An efficiency issue. If we're looking at things like individualized instruction, which is all the rage, and everybody tells teachers that they should do it, but they never tell them how to do it, technology is one of the solutions that could come into play if we're talking about social learning, you know, social networks and those kinds of things. Then you can get to some of those kind of individualized learning environments where teachers don't have to put as much time into the planning of everything in order for it to be success.
Well, they actually get some more time to think about the things that they're doing because they have all these other things that are no longer in their day. I mean, we have a problem, I think, is that we're pretty good at piling it on. I mean, one of the things, you know, what are the things we're going to maybe continue, or what are the things, you know, if you think about it, even in your own office or for the different ones that are working out there, I mean, sit down tomorrow and say, okay, what are the things you want to start? What are the things you want to stop? And what are the things you want to continue? It's very easy to come up with the start and continues. It's very difficult to come up with something you're going to stop.
Right.
Because everything seems so important. But unless we, you know, give teachers A and B to do, if we don't find a way to take C and D away or integrate that in through some efficiency practices, whether it be distance learning or, you know, different types of way of reducing their class load, I mean, they're going to – teachers see it. It's more work, and it is more work. And, you know, I don't think any of us who have been teachers in the classroom feel that teachers don't have enough to do.
Okay. Well, this sounds like a great opportunity to ask the listeners out there, the people who are following us, what kind of efficiencies they would like to either implement or that they have implemented, what they'd like to see, what kind of capabilities. Just give us your thoughts. So at this point, I think that it's a good time to stop the main discussion part and go to our closing thoughts. My closing thought, I'll give Danny a chance to compose his thoughts. I know
No need.
It takes him a little longer than others. I wanted to talk really quickly, you know, given about 30 seconds, about an article that I read recently about a school district that is grappling with the idea of cell phones. And their solution is to explore jamming technology. And this is a Northeast Iowa school district wants to actually use cell phone jamming technology to make sure that students aren't using it. My personal thought is that this is going down the wrong path, and they're fighting a bit against the tide. I think that it's much more useful to try to find ways to leverage the technology that kids are bringing with them to the classroom. So instead of fighting against them and, you know, taking, you know, cell phone after cell phone after cell phone away from kids, find a way for it to be meaningful. If all you see the technology doing is being used for cheating, then you're going to end up with something like this policy. But if you actually give it a legitimate reason, such as a school division in England is now offering kids during exams a chance to phone a friend for a question.
That's a great idea. Maybe that has to be a topic one day.
Yeah. Maybe in the future we'll talk about cell phone technologies. But if you can give kids a legitimate reason to use and have their cell phone, then you don't have to worry so much about, you know, the only thing that's happening is with the negative consequences. So that's me on my soapbox, and I'll turn it over to Daniel for his closing thought now.
Well, am I allowed to piggyback off your closing thought?
Certainly, if you'd like. I'm used to following on my coattails anyway.
Right. Well, somebody's got to pick up that garbage. One of the things that I think has been interesting, and you know, I have the bounty of working with a lot of great educators, and you know, I get to work closely with a lot of teachers and a lot of principals, and I think Newport News is not like unlike other divisions that's been fighting the same battle of, you know, I guess the idea of cell phones being out, and you know, you hear every meeting. I was at a great presentation where a presenter actually asked us to leave our cell phones on. He's like, you know, we got to learn how to talk around these things. We're fighting the tide.
Right.
I don't remember where I was, but you know, we're asking everybody to shut their phones off. And invariably, three or four people don't do it, and it's a bigger distraction than if the phone just rang. So, I mean, I think our educators deal with that. We have, of course, this is a brand new concept, but one of the things we found is, especially at our high schools, is that by simply taking these phones away, it was actually having no impact at all, because kids are just too savvy. I mean, it gets back to our conversation tonight about, you know, what we do in America. Man, we're bright. We come up with, and especially kids, I mean, they don't miss a beat. They come up with lots of ideas. So one of the things we found is that kids were very savvy, and they would get a phone, and they would also get the insurance policy.
Sure.
And so what they do is they would have their phone taken at school. They'd get the SIM card out of it. The phone is essentially lost. So they would go back to the phone retailer, use their insurance policy, put the SIM card back in, and they're back in business the next day. So schools just felt that they were fighting a losing battle, and it's actually led to a lot of change. I mean, it's a, but it was from the grassroots. It was from teachers saying and principals saying, listen, this policy is just, it's ineffective. So now we found brand new ways, and we've developed new policies of making this effective learning tools. We actually have some middle schools who are doing lots of cool experiments of polling answers. You have the clickers in classrooms, but, kids can text in their answers and be able to project them through a smart board. So I think we're finding ways of using these technologies effectively. And what it's doing, one of the things that I think it's doing, and this is just completely conjecture, as most things that come into my mouth are, is that, one of the things that I think kids do is the nature of rebellion, and that kids want to rebel against the generation, the man holding them down. But what we've found is that as cell phones have been more embraced, and really this is just my thought, as cell phones will be more embraced, I think we're going to see them as less of a problem. They're not going to come out as much. The kids don't get in trouble. They don't get the attention. When they're used effectively, they're used effectively for instruction. So I just think this is a great way that people can come together and think when we have time to actually think that this is a problem, and that we can change quickly if we need to. Often we say, we're stuck in a kind of an old model for education. But when we need to, we can change. And I think that's just a great part of, what we can do as educators.
Daniel, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. And
it's always a pleasure.
Wherever you are, Simon, we're thinking about you.
Hope you're warm.
We're cursing your name for missing the podcast. But anyway, I again want to take this opportunity.
This is nothing against Canadians.
Nothing against
Canadians. We love our northern brothers.
Yes, it's not because Simon is Canadian. It's because he's a slacker.
Yes.
Anyway, I want to take this opportunity to, again, just to thank the people who have decided to follow us. Again, we can be found on iTunes at just do a search for The Back of the Class in the podcast section. And we can also be reached at thebackoftheclass@yahoo.com. So anyway, that's the end of our podcast for tonight. Thanks, Daniel.
Goodbye.